I'm on the road to recovery, step by step.
Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. And now I'd like to bring Tanner up for our joke.
I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name's Tanner. So an old blind cowboy wanders into an all-girl biker bar by mistake. He finds his way to the bar stool and orders a shot of whiskey. After sitting there for a while, he yells at the bartender, "Hey, you want to hear a blonde joke?" The bar immediately falls absolutely silent. In a very deep, husky voice, the woman next to him says, "Before you tell that joke, cowboy, I think it's only fair, given that you are blind, that you should know five things. The bartender is a blonde girl with a baseball bat. The bouncer is a blonde girl with a billy club. I'm 6 foot tall, 175-pound blonde woman with a black belt in karate. The woman sitting next to me is a blonde and a professional weightlifter. The lady to your right is a blonde and a professional wrestler. Now think about it, seriously. Cowboy, do you still want to tell that blonde joke?" The blind cowboy thinks for a second, shakes his head and murmurs, "No, not if I'm going to have to explain it five times."
Thanks for that, Tanner. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute silent meditation. So please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise that might or will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. And let's begin.
Thank you.
Let's follow with the fog light prayer. And if you don't know, it's on the left and the right screens. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who were lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. There is a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I have asked John to read Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is. So, John.
Hello, my name is John, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. Spiritual experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means a rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped into an unsuspected inner source which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of a spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Thank you, John. All right, in a moment we're going to start the step series, so please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phone to airplane mode or just turn them off. And now we will have Peter for his eighth step series today, and I'm very excited to hear what he has to say. Peter.
Love the sound of that. My name is Peter. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And again, thank the group for having me here. A few more sessions, and I can't believe this thing's going to be over in about 4 weeks. But here we are. June 23rd, 1988 was my separation from alcohol. And I'm very grateful to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank the good Lord in good standing, and to be a recovered member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I share this from like a million podiums. When I say recovered, I'm not trying to separate myself from anyone in this room, certainly not Alcoholics Anonymous. But it is the first promise on the title page in Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous that we get recovered from this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And I can settle for many things in Alcoholics Anonymous. Bill said something like, good is the enemy of best. And I can settle for, you know, the struggles that we go through. And I find out struggle is just a mask to the truth. When I say I'm struggling and I have all this information in front of me, when I say I'm struggling and I'm in a room full of alcoholics, I'm saying I'm struggling and I have people who can potentially sponsor me, it's no struggle. It's a master the truth. And the truth is I don't want to do the work. And I like to sit and struggle because it gives me an out to stay sick. And as crazy as that sounds, there's a payoff to it. I have less responsibility, less accountability, less consistency. Well, I'm an alcoholic. So I'm very grateful that I came in here. It was given to me this gift of desperation. And thank the good Lord, the desperation that I came in here with is not the same, but the desperation to get right with my God and to pack into the stream and be a good member of, among members is still there. And so I find myself doing many things throughout the day, especially in the morning, in the evening, to get right with this God. And often, not better than, not less than, but often when I speak to some folks, they kind of look at me like they have, you know, the deer in the headlights, like, you do all of that? And I say, how could you not? I can't fathom another way to go about doing this, to do all I can and be wide open and lay my heart before God and walk with some transparency. And I'm very grateful for my sponsor who rips the cover off the ball occasionally. It's really important to help someone change. I was reading something the other day, and it really hit me. To have someone change is to let them change the awareness of themselves. And so what my sponsor does is when I'm dragging myself over hot coals, he will stop that. And when I'm laying back and maybe not doing what I'm supposed to be doing, he will stop that to get me a new point of view on me. And this is incredibly helpful. So when I put these teachers together and that I've had since I walked in here and the desperation God gave me, I find myself doing many things like studying a lot of material, working with a lot of material, praying to God, communing with God, and things like that. It gets me here tonight. And not a better member, but just a member in good standing. I was at a meeting about a week ago. And it was one of these go-arounds or show of hands or something like this, which sometimes can be dangerous. And when the speaker doesn't cover the topic, it's a free-for-all after that, you know. And the meeting turned into, let's blame our parents for all our afflictions. It was one of those meetings. And bless their hearts. And this one guy was sharing how he was having this really difficult time. His job, his wife, and his kids. And those are real things. And he was really jammed up about it. And he had a head full. And it's been that way. And his solution to this was he goes for a jog, goes for a massage, or takes a nap. And I'm listening to this, and I'm breaking out into a cold sweat. Because I'm thinking of the torture and the bondage to combat alcoholism, and those are my remedies. Now, perhaps he wasn't a real alcoholic, and that works for him, that works for him, that's great. If that works for you, that's great. But I'm sitting there listening to this when we have this, which takes me to this power called God. Well, I don't have to escape from life, but go into life. I don't have to hide out anymore. And seeking refuge and hiding out is two different things. Going into prayer, I used to think it's to recharge my batteries. Well, maybe it does that, but what it does is amp me up enough to get right back out there and be a productive member of society, be a productive member of Alcoholics Anonymous, be a member among members. None of this is possible if I'm running around with untreated alcoholism. And when I can only do as good as the light I'm standing in. And when we talk about, you know, making a list in eight and going out and making as many direct amends as possible, unless I do that, how could I live now knowing how I lived then? How could I be present when I'm driven by the voices of the past? Yeah. So my first 6 months in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was far from being any kind of poster child for Alcoholics Anonymous. I was completely untreated my first 6 months. I was going to meetings, but I didn't have a book. I didn't have steps, and I had this fellow who was helping me out in Minnesota, but I wasn't locked into a sponsor. So I was listening to what was being said at meetings and figuring it out on my own. This is a very dangerous remedy for anyone, let alone me as an alcoholic. Yeah. And almost 6 months to the day, I came this close to getting drunk, and it was only divine intervention that kept me going into a liquor store or to a cop spot, because the pain of living without this solution sober was horrendous. I was crawling out of my skin. I had anxiety all the time. I was driven by 100 forms of fear, tossing and turning at night, and the barrel of monkeys up in the head were chirping all at the same time. It was insane. And I knew one thing that would shut that down would be a double, a pint of whiskey, a couple of pills, a bag of this, a bag of that, some of this, some of that. Put it all together. Just IV it and get me away from me. And what happens is I surrendered again. I was given another surrender on December 22nd, 1988, the day before my 6 month. And something changed in that gift of desperation. We get to see a little bit clearer, hear a little bit clearer. There's something incredible happens to someone like me when I'm broken down to that place. Not only I become teachable, but I become malleable. God can kind of move me around. I'm less resistant or not even resistant. And in that weakest moment, I'm grasping for God and I find some sort of solace or refuge in that breaking down of me. It's when I think I'm doing so good, and I feel powerful, I really don't have power at all. I have total self-reliance and self-confidence, and that doesn't work. Something happens when someone like me or us get to finally get into the light or start to walk into the light. We start to separate us from our own self and no longer automatically go on with the suggestions that the self tells us to do. The old default button's not working anymore, thank God. And as I continue to grow into this light, that light penetrates every area of my soul. And when that soul is lit up, we're on a different footing. And you don't have to say a word when you walk in a room. You're saying a lot. It's like you go to a meeting, you hear John tell a story, and then you hear another meeting, you hear Mary tell a story, and John did a nice job. But there's something that Mary said that lights you up. It's the soul meeting the soul. And what happens to someone like me, we walk different, we talk different. Not that we're not a prey to stuff out there, because it's going to happen, but the walk is lighter than the prior walk, which is heavy. And I have cement boots on no matter what's going on. No matter what's going on, I'm punching a hole in the greatest thing that could. It's always a yeah, but what if? Rather than let me just enjoy this. And when I'm not in the light, I take credit for any good thing that happens to me. What a great job I did. Rather than give a credit to him and take the credit for the screw-ups, which I deserve. Something incredible happens to people like us as the death of self-will begins to happen. Less self, more God, less self. But not many folks will do that walk. Only desperation will allow me to do that. Now, how free do I want to be? Now, I know you can tell me how drunk I want to be. I want to be really drunk, like drunker, and then beyond that. Just really drunk. The number, the better. The more insulated I am, the more passed out I am, I like that and keep going. Because when I come to and get sick, I want more alcohol. And then I come into Alcoholics Anonymous and I hear some of the elders talking, even the youngins who are lit up talking about, I love the effect produced by God. I want more God. And I waver on this. I'm double-minded. Scripture talks about double-minded. Well, a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And what I find, if I'm trying to do this with the mind is very fickle. Today I want to be Moses, tomorrow I want to be Rambo. They don't work, you know. It's interesting when the dialogue in the head is Rambo is meeting Moses. This is very interesting conversation that goes on in the head. And Romeo or Juliet's right in the middle, you know. That's why you ask an alcoholic at 7 o'clock in the morning, how are you doing? I'm exhausted. Well, I woke up at 5 and I got 500 people I'm trying to entertain all at once. You know, it would be like if you guys started asking me randomly questions. Everyone all at once started asking questions and I tried to answer every question while people in the back are screaming. Well, I'm going to be exhausted after like 10 minutes of that. This is crazy. But don't we do that all day long? You know, on your way to a meeting and you're speaking on the 11th step. So you're going to sound profound and spiritual. You're going to be Jesus up at that podium. But in the car, you're a Rambo. You know? Anyone cut you off? I'm gunning them down, walking to me. How you doing? Wonderful. I'm just so spiritual. Yeah. So something happens to someone like me when I'm submitted to this work. There's a difference between, I think I've shared this, between me being motivated and driven and called. You know, motivated, I want to climb the corporate ladder, and I get to the top of the ladder, and I realize the ladder's against the wrong wall. But I want to climb that corporate ladder. I want to do good. I'm going to be diligent. I'm going to work hard. That's all good. But there's a payoff to it. And sometimes that motivation might make me do some things that I don't want anyone to know about. Because it's about me getting there. Called is different. Called is a walk. And, you know, motivated, we get unmotivated because the mind is so fickle. But called is called. And we could push call away all we want. But once we're called, we're called. And the thing about the calling with this walk is a narrow road. And a lot of things I have found will be challenged. And my way of operating will be challenged. My way of viewing people will be challenged. And sometimes I'm wondering, God, how much more can you strip down from me? And like my sponsor says, he's just started. When there's nothing left of you, then you'll begin to get better. That's a proposition most folks aren't going to talk about or even do, because I just want to go to a meeting and not drink. What's all this stuff about? And if that works for you, great. To me, that's painful. That's a painful way to do recovery. See, I'd rather bear the pain of waiting for God than bear the pain of going on without God. So if I'm going to do that, he's going to push. I don't know if this word, I don't know if I buy into the word God's going to test. Some of us like to say that. I don't know. Test to me rings up cruel. But push, absolutely. Push where I think I can't go. You know, if you work out, there's always that one more rep in the gym. One more rep. I can't. One more rep. That's what God's doing. One more. I got you. I'll spot you. One more rep. If I really want to get spiritual muscles. Then when we get to the other side, oh my God, live life forward, understand it back, say, how did I get here? Because God told you to do one more. Deny self one more time. And when I can't, I don't have it in me to do service, God says, take one more on. The other night, I think it was Tuesday night, I heard two half fifth steps, a handful of inventories, and had a couple of random calls come in. I don't know where I got the endurance to do that, but when I was done, it was done. And I was better for it. But on the third phone call, I'm not even picking up the phone. If it rings again, I'm done. I'm so pick up the phone. Hi. What's wrong with you? You know. I can't write. I have found an 8-step list if I haven't done 4 and 5. And I can't really write an 8-step list if I haven't done the previous work, because the list will be skewed. The list will be self-serving. The list will be people that I think I want to go to, not the ones I have to go to that I don't want to go see. That's why I pray. I'm always told to pray before I create this 8-step list, and I refer to my 4th step on the Homs course, because God will give me clarity to see and remember things. Because our book talks about an 8-step. I write an 8-step list even though I have resentment in connection with them. There's going to be people I harmed that had no resentment. I can't see that, but God can. And this isn't about me getting into step 9 saying I'm sorry. Sometimes I'm sorry is self-serving. I just want you to let me off the hook when I say I'm sorry. Hey, I'm really sorry about that. Oh, okay, good. And we move on. I did nothing for you but hurt you, and you let me off the hook. This feels good for me. I'm off the hook. When I'm sitting there saying I need to amend this, I need to fix this, what can I do to make it right? That changes the whole game. Because I'm coming to you hat in hand and saying, asking you, what can I do to fix the harm I caused you? Because it's me who caused the harm. And I look at step 9, and sometimes, you know, I can say, well, what's the big deal, man? I only stole $20 off the guy. And it was 20 years ago. And I look at it from an external view. $20, I'll give you 30 for the interest over time. And we're done. But he's sitting there going, you are my closest friend. It's not the 20. You wounded me deep inside internally. Or when I would steal from my dad, it wasn't about giving him back the money. His firstborn me stole from his dad. That crushed him, even if it was 10 cents. Why steal from me? I'm your dad. Just come ask me. So I could look at things from an external view, but I need to understand it was an internal hit those folks took, which creates a sense of urgency to go see those folks. Because I know when people have done me wrong and they're close to me, how that hurts. I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, I talked about this betrayal that happened with the few folks. If a stranger would have done it, it wouldn't taste good. But folks who I felt were close to me and did something, like, it hurt my heart. I was beside myself. Like, why? One guy's amends. He texted me in amends. Hey, I'm really sorry about this. Thanks. A lot of feeling behind that. I took it as it came. Move on. It's really important. And, you know, the question my sponsors would always ask me, these considerations, do I believe that completing the amends I'm consciously aware of has anything to do with me drinking again or not? And I can say, well, I'm feeling good. I'm comfortable finally. I've hit my mark in AA. I know I have a lot of amends to make. I'll get to them, but right now things are okay, and I'll get to it, which means I forgot I'm alcoholic, and I don't believe completing those amends is going to, if I don't complete those amends, I'm going to drink or not, and I've become God. It's a quick shift. But when I'm up against it, if I don't get to complete these amends, at least make an attempt to complete those amends, there's a really good chance I'm going to drink again. Because I'm still living with the weight of the past. And that's driving me when I think I'm spiritual. That's driving me. I'm still seeing the world through the past. I'm still hearing the world through the past. And I still have those skeletons in a closet. That if you walk down a block, I got to take an exit. Because I'm not free. How free? Mark H. used to tell us, how free do you want to be? And then the road narrows to a point where I'm a member of AA, I go to meetings, I sponsor people, I have a sponsor, but the road has got so narrow, now this is just a relationship between me and my Creator. How free do I want to be to get immersed with Him? Or am I using the popular vote to tell me how good I'm doing? Which is really dangerous, by the way, because I can go to 10 sick people and say, hey, you're doing great, I must be doing great, and I'm not doing great at all. But how am I doing with God? Do I commune with God? So I get through 4, 5, 6, and 7, and all my sponsors, you know, had me go right to an 8-step list when I was completed with 7. And some of those sponsors had me sit with 6 and 7 a little bit. Some had me move 6, 7, 8, 9, depending on where I was and what their influence what this book was. But I would create this list. And I would pray before I write, and I get out a notepad and look at my 4th step and be really clear on the harms caused to other people. And I would put their name down. I put their name down and the harm caused. If there was a contact for them, I'd write that down. With social media now, it can basically locate anyone. This is pre-social media. So if we phone number, an address, something. And if I didn't have a contact, I'd just leave it blank. Here's the power of God. There was an old relationship I was in. And this woman's parents really, really treated me like gold. They were super, super nice to me. And they had dreams that, you know, their daughter was going to walk down the aisle with me one day and all this nice stuff. And they would just treat me really good. But I'm alcoholic and I was active. And little by slowly, did I start to see my alcoholism and some other things I was addicted to in action. And things started to get missing. And it got really, really bad. So I was thrown out one day. I got arrested with their daughter. And they didn't want to see me anymore. I got arrested for possession and sales and some other nonsense. They didn't want to see me anymore. Well, many years went by, and I'm in recovery now, and I'm doing this inventory, and I'm looking at harms caused, my 8-step list, and I don't know, I can't remember the address where they live to send them an honest letter. My sponsor, don't call. You need to write a letter first. And he told me what to put in the body of that letter after prayer, and a contact where they can reach me. And it was an honest letter. It wasn't like, I like to get your back letter. You know, we can do that. Honey, it's me. I'm sober 20 days. Take me back. It was a heartfelt letter, and I was clear on the harms I caused, and I didn't drag them through the mud. They don't need to remember ugly things either. I need to be considerate here, but I wrote this letter, and I have it, but I don't know the address. And I could not remember. It was addressed, a letter addressed to her dad. I couldn't remember his name. This is pre-social media, so I don't know what to do. And the people that I was hanging out with, God knows where they are. And I was hanging out in the Lower East Side, and I hadn't been to the Lower East Side in many years. But here's what God does. God knew my intent was really pure and sincere. So I began to pray, Father, if it's your will, please put this person in my life. At least give me their phone number. I don't know what to do. I'm willing to go. He gave me the willingness to go complete this amends. I was working in New Jersey at the time. I'm sitting behind my desk, and out of nowhere, the address just popped into my head. And her dad had a nickname, which I won't say from the podium, but we'll say it was Bill. And Bill, 123 Main Street, apartment, 1A. Oh, my God. After months of praying, and I put that on the, and I mailed it. Haven't heard from them since. I was told the universe responds to like three tries. I tried again after months. And then I tried a third time after months. Never got a response. I did what I could. My book tells me it's water over the dam now. But if that person or her dad or her mom walked in this room, I knew I made an honest attempt, and I can walk to that door and put out my hand, say welcome, and have a talk with them. That's free. Conversely, if I didn't do that, I'm still trapped in bondage and guilt and remorse over what I had done. I was not a good boyfriend. I was a self-serving, self-seeking, fall-down drunk, addicted to other things. And when I got arrested, they saw all the marks on my arm, and I knew exactly what their daughter was dating. A drunken junkie is what she was dating. He wasn't Mr. America like they thought. So it was heartbreaking for them. I didn't see it at the time. I did when I sobered up. So I create this list, and God gave me enough, pardon me, courage, strength, and direction to take a look at what I had done on my harms, not what they had done, others had done to me. Because I'm really clear on this, that even though you may have done some bad things to me, I'm going to clean up my side of the street. And when I go there, it's not like, well, you did this. Yeah, but you did that. That's not discussed at all. So I have this list. And the first time I went out and did amends, I made over 200 direct amends. I remember this. I was doing like drive-by amends. I pull up to a street corner and just hit people with amends, I was a longshoreman for many years. I worked on the docks in Brooklyn. And I was in touch with a lot of longshoremen, a lot of truckers and things like that. Really good, honest, hardworking people. What I would do is borrow money off the truck drivers. I would ask them, if they wanted to get their service on their truck, they had to give me some money. Otherwise, they'd sit in the yard all day. I wouldn't service them. I was borrowing money off of people I shouldn't be in the same area code with and using my dad's name so they'd give me some money. And I had all this money out there, but I wasn't paying anyone back. And what happened out of that was my dad started to get wind of it, and he was paying off some of my debts to save face. I didn't care. I really didn't. And when my dad would confront me, I wish he would just shut up and leave me alone. I couldn't see the harm I was doing until I sobered up. And I had a whole bunch of these men that I had to go see. And right across the street from where I worked, there was a little diner, they called it the hole in a wall. There was a bank next door to it, and years ago, they drilled a hole through this little diner into the bank and robbed it, and that's how they got the name Hole in the Wall. And if you're from South Brooklyn, you'll get that completely. They would get there like 5 o'clock in the morning, the truck drivers and the longshoremen, and I knew that. I dragged myself out of bed and get down there around 6 a.m., and I wouldn't go in because they were eating breakfast, and I didn't want to bother them. They were in little cliques, and they would smoke and have coffee and have breakfast, and I would wait for them to come out. And many of them remember, they knew me immediately, and they would back up like, what? Or, kid, I have no money. And I'd say, no, it's not about that. And hat in hand, I would say, listen, I was sick, and I'm getting better, and I'm sober. And sometimes I would tell them I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Many of them didn't even know what that was. But part of what I do is fixing what I had done wrong, and I'm here to repair what I have done. I never have told anyone I'm doing this so I don't drink again, because that sounds selfish and self-seeking. Because if I'm here and I say, you don't really want to come here, it's all about you again. And I said, I borrowed money off you a long time ago, and I'm here to pay it back, and I'd have the money. And if it was a lousy $20 and it was a few years ago, I'm coming in with $25 and $30. Some of them would take it. Glad you're doing good and get on with their life. They didn't want to hear the rest of it. Some would listen. Some would say, I don't want the money as long as you're doing okay. And it was just every day I'd go down there and wait. Then I would work on the pier and the truckers would roll in, or I'd see a longshoreman I hadn't seen in a while, or an office worker who I lost contact with was maybe working somewhere else. They would come in and it was the bell went off, go see them. And so what I started to do was, like a good sober alcoholic, not an untreated alcoholic, I would keep money in my car, $100, $150, just leave it in there. Because I don't want to get caught without any money. So when I would see them, I'd go to my car, take out $40, $50, whatever I owed, and pay off. And that's what I was doing. 4 months that took. When I finally got done with this and was walking the walk, thank the good Lord that the walk was the sermon, I was showing up for work on time. Part of the amends to my employees was getting to work on time and leaving when they told me to leave, not cutting short. And there was nothing to do. I would find something to do. I remember I completed my last amends in that environment that I was consciously aware of. And during that time, what began to happen was people were coming out of the woodwork. Hey, kid, you go to that double A place, you went for the cure, they would say. I have a niece, I have a son, I have a daughter, I have an aunt, I have a this, I have a that. Can you take them to that place? I had a couple tell me, what did you do to stop drinking? And they would confess to me that they can't stop drinking. Drinking was almost socially acceptable where I worked. But some of them couldn't control it, and they would come to me. And my response is, that's why you're still there. Because when we make amends here, things open up there. When I make amends there, things open up here. Just don't know. We've entered the world, we're about to enter the world of the spirit, and up is down and down is up. Nothing makes sense to the mind, but in the world of the spirit makes perfect sense. And God's way of connecting the dots is unlike me. Connected dots is a straight line. God's doing this. And when I completed that last amends that I remember, a gentleman passed on. I owed him a chunk of change. It was a few months after that, live life forward, understand it backwards, that my job, my career, my mission there was now completed, because I got called into the business I do now, and I didn't even see that evolving to where I am now. One the gentleman I talked about a couple of weeks ago, Vince Dowling, I was going to his aftercare group, Tuesday mornings, 10 o'clock. And I would tell the workers, listen, I have to go to this aftercare group. What's that? It helps me not drink. Go now. They would tell me, go now. And when no one was left, it was just Vince and I. And we would have these, I don't know, 6-8 months of this, just him and I talking. He was sober 30, 31 years by then. He was just a guru in AA. And he'd give me life lessons on how to do life sober. And the things he missed and mixed up, it was invaluable. And then he says, I want you to come work for me. I'm going to train you. I'm going to teach you. And that kind of opened up into what I do now. A lot of the things I do now, I learned from Vince, and I was new in AA. I couldn't see it. God didn't reveal that to me, because I would have taken over that and ruined it. But a lot of the techniques I use where I work now, when I do now for a career, Vince gave me that. Because I was doing what I was supposed to be doing and where I was supposed to be when I was supposed to be there. The value of being awake and taking direction. And many of those men eventually had their sons and daughters go into treatment. And guess who was their aftercare leader? With Vince shadowing me now, was me. What a complete, 180. There was one gentleman. I probably shared this last time I did this these talks. This guy was one of those guys, you could hear his voice when he was down the block. He was about 6'12", you know. His hands were as big as this podium. He's this big Irish Polish guy. And the deep, loud voice, and you knew when he was on property. And I owed him some money, and also I had used some really ugly language with this guy one day, like just disgusting language. Now, he could have just picked me up and squeezed the life out of me, and he didn't. He just took it that day. I cursed him out horribly. And here he is, and I'm in my workstation, and my mind's saying, he don't remember, just get out of here. You've done enough. And Spirit says, hello, Joe, how are you? Remember me. And I was in front of him. And I began to make the approach. The difference between the approach and the amends. The approach is I go to you. Amends is when it's done, yeah? And I started this thing, and I never forget what he did. He gave me a bear hug and basically lifted me off the ground. And what I found out was this. He and my dad had been friends from way back when. They grew up together. He knew my dad forever. And he said, I'm going to tell you, so I don't need the money. He's good to see Victor's son doing so well. He's me and your dad. I remember your mom when they were dating. He says, but let me tell you something. He says, you know, we meet across the street in a hole in the wall. He says, I see your dad every morning. And every time I sit down with your dad, you know who the topic of conversation is? He says, is you. Your dad talks about you. He's so proud. His chest explodes when he talks about you. And I remember when he talked about you, he would frown. You need to know that. My dad never told me any of this. But there I was doing what God allowed me to do, go make amends, and I find this out. The effect of being sober and the effect, the poison we bring when we're drunk or untreated. Well, as afraid as I was to go see this man, and how do I tell this giant of a man, I'm sorry for cursing you out, and I took money off you, and I walked away floating. Now, our big book talks about how to approach the man we hated will arise. Again, this is praying. I would have my list in front of me, I swear, and I would pray to each name on that list. And the ones I couldn't locate, I would pray for their goodwill. I would pray for a spirit of forgiveness. I would pray that they walk into God's light, all good things for them. And if it's your will, Father, please put them in front of me. I can't demand that, but I can ask. And I pray to each name. Every day. Every day. And when they were done, I put a check mark next to them. By the way, it doesn't mean I'm done now for good. Because now I have to live this amends. I don't steal anymore. I haven't stolen anything since I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. Not even a pen off a desk. Do you ever fill out an application, put the pen in your pocket, go to the elevator, go, I got to go back, this is not mine. And you bring it back and say, what's wrong with you? It's a pen. Well, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and I live a life which demands rigorous honesty. They're like, 911, get this guy out of here. Yeah. So I would pray to this list for the willingness to go make amends. For the willingness to go make amends is another prayer. Because I couldn't trust me and I still don't trust me. I trust God. I trust my sponsor. But it talks about how to approach the man we hated will arise. I got this guy on my list. We'll call him Joe, this landlord of this apartment that I was renting. My dad was paying the rent because I was spending the money on drink and trashed the place, borrowed money off the guy, put all sorts of unsavory characters in there. It was a disaster area when I finally got thrown out of there, and I still hated him. And how could I go to this guy? I'm embarrassed. So I'm praying and praying and praying and praying for willingness, but it's not coming. But God sets up things. God will use everything and everyone to get what he needs to get done. Because God's pursuing us. God's here to seek and to save. To seek and to save. And we'll use everyone and everything to get this done. To get me from point A to point B. Even if I'm going to get all messy from it. Because I need to get on the other side. And I'm looking as a punishment. Why are you doing this to me? And God's saying, why not? Why not? You know, if you have little children, go in and study. They think they're being punished because they want to go out and play baseball. And you say, no, if you study, you will get a good education. And God's pushing and pushing. How to Approach the Man We Hated Will Arise. Our book talks about this. And all I can see is what he had done to me and less of what I had done to him. But God uses everything and everyone. And I was sitting in a restaurant one time and about to have dinner. And this guy was in there with his family. And he saw me. And he's staring at me, talking to some other gentleman. And it wasn't like, I know Pete, let me go over and say hello. Is there's that dirtbag, and I'm going to kill him. And I had to walk out of the restaurant. I was shaking and I was sweating and I was really uncomfortable. I was not free. I was still driven by voices from the past and my behavior from the past. I was not free in Alcoholics Anonymous. Where else am I going to go to get free? And so I immediately called my sponsor and told him what had happened. And he gave me he read me the Riot Act first, like sponsors like to do. And then he gave me clear-cut instructions that I had to write more inventory on this guy. So I wrote more inventory. My resentment towards this guy still. Almost what sometimes we call a little mini fourth step. Resentment, Joe, cause. I did the whole thing and some new things came up. And I had to pray for forgiveness and to go make amends. Now, I was taught when you go make amends and you have an appointment, you go in someplace, dress up. Because we may be the only copy of the big book they ever read. So I'm not going to show up looking like I'm going to commit a felony as soon as the amends is over. Clean shaven, put on a sport jacket, dress, take a shower, and go look proper. And give them respect for the first time because I never gave it to them anyway. So one Sunday morning, I got done with my prayer and meditation, and I was getting dressed. Why am I getting dressed for? And I knew where I was going. And I'm still questioning. I put on a nice pair of pants, a sport jacket, a nice shirt, shaved. I was saving money in this dresser drawer. It was a chunk of money in there because I owed him back rent and some IOUs. And I took the money, put it in my breast pocket, off I went. And they let me in when I showed up. It was a Sunday morning, they were home. And they invited me into the house. What if I had looked like I used to look? They probably wouldn't open the door. Be still at it. But I looked proper. So they invited me and I sat them down. And I was clear with them without making them uncomfortable. Like if we have to make amends to the opposite sex and things maybe we did that were one too nice, I don't need to drag her through the mud because she doesn't want to remember that. She knows why I'm there. So I told them. I told him I'm not drinking, I'm not taking any drugs anymore. I've been sober this long, and I go to a place called Alcoholics Anonymous. They're very grateful I didn't live in their building anymore. That's one thing I can tell you. And we had this talk, and we began to talk, and I said, I'm here to make amends, and I owe you about this much. And I took the money out and put it on the table. I said, if that's not enough, please tell me. And we had this moment of reconciliation. And what ensued, I've tried to share this story from a million podiums and it never does justice. Because it's a God wink, it's a God moment that you can't describe and you can't see coming. I was doing what I'm supposed to do. And now I had to do it. I was being called to fix the past. I couldn't live with that stuff unhinged anymore. I couldn't do it. It was too painful. I know right from wrong. I've been awakened in AA. I left the house. And it was like maybe 15 steps up to their apartment. It was a basement apartment where we used to live. And I don't remember really walking back to my car. I don't remember the drive home. I just remember one thing. For a brief moment, I know it sounds kind of out there, but I couldn't feel my shoes hit the concrete on the way to the car, like walking on air. And I remember being lifted with this golden white light that just took over me, and my eyes filled up with tears. It was beyond euphoric. And I was conscious of that for a brief moment. I can't feel the concrete. I feel like I'm being lifted. And just this thing came over me. And I don't remember anything else except putting the key in my apartment door, and I was home. I was changed from the inside out. I was changed forever, quite frankly, knowing that I'm known by my Creator. That happened. It's happened many times. When we're plowing the field and God will do the growing, or the chopping wood and carrying water, the hands hurt, you get blistered up, you're exhausted, I can't go anymore, and then God says, now, and we're changed. And I couldn't see it coming. God's way of keeping anonymous, huh? Because if I would have saw that coming, the whole thing would have been not so genuine. It would have been impure. I'm looking for a payoff, and I'm not doing amends to get a payoff. I'm doing amends because it's the right thing to do. And I had asked him, like in most of my amends, and when I had the opportunity to do it, is there anything you need to tell me? What can I do to make this right? I'm here to fix this. I'm sincerely here to fix this. I hurt you. It's way beyond the money here. You rented an apartment to me with trust, and I blew it. I couldn't fathom what it's like. He was married. They had one daughter, and his wife was pregnant with another one. The guy was working and going to school, and I show up. You know they had to double lock the doors at night. I would, knowing the animal who's living downstairs that might break in at any moment. You know, roaming the streets, walking out, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning with the TV on my shoulders. You know, taking stuff out and selling it. Flacco and Paco making regular visits to my apartment, you know. So I had to fix that. And I did. And in doing an amends like that, I was changed. And I've gone back to employers without causing more harm. The book is really clear. They have no right to save my own skin at someone else's expense. So there were times where I couldn't go to certain people and implicate others while I was doing it. I had to get their consent. Hey, do you mind if I go see, you know, Frank, the boss, and tell him what I was up to? And they say, absolutely not. You're going to get us all in trouble. I had to pay attention to that. But that doesn't mean I'm done with the amends, because I can give back. And my way of giving back from stealing was to be a good worker. And I was a good worker. I can say that clearly. There was a time when I, years ago, when I tried to make an amends to my ex-wife. But she was too drunk to even hear it, and she just basically cursed me out. I listened. I tried putting her in treatment. Well, I put her in treatment like five times. Called in a couple of favors to make it right. And I was a good husband. I'm going to be honest with you. I was a good husband. But she felt, you know, slighted in certain things. AA ruined her life. And so I did that, but it never to no avail. But at least I tried. And I put my head on a pillow with a clear head. So each year I go through the work, and sometimes, you know, there's amends to be made, but they pale in comparison to the first time around doing this work. And a lot of the things that would plague me when I got here in my first few years here have dissolved. Doesn't mean everything is dissolved, because I'm up against it from time to time. I'm currently being challenged with some things. And maybe I speak inappropriate, maybe I say something I should, I don't know. But what I do now and how I lived then is two different people. See, I'm alcoholic. I have alcoholism. Like when I have a flu or I have a sore throat. A sore throat and a flu doesn't stay with me forever if I take medicine for it. It's always there, but I get away from it because God's greater than all of it. And something happens when we lock into God. I have alcoholism. I'm always going to be an alcoholic, but it's not on me anymore. A day at a time. I don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. I don't know what an hour from now is going to bring, but so far today, pretty good. My pride will tell me I'm beyond making amends. My pride will tell me, what's the sense? I'm a loser. Point being, I will never make amends. What activities have I put in front of making amends, creating a list of going through the steps? Well, I have home group tonight. I feel good. I'm going to a workshop. I got things to do. I will get to it. I'm going to get to that list. I'm going to get to the steps. I'm going to start the steps. I'm going to write a new list. I'm going to start making those amends. I'm going to get to it. Failing to realize alcohol already got to me. Alcoholism already got to me because I'm not doing it. And the longer I delay, the more it embeds itself in me. Well, I know I'm not going to drink. I feel good. I know I'm not going to drink because I'm God. And I found when, you know, guys call me up and they're in this, they're all jammed up with things. I just had a guy just start sponsoring them. I said, well, what's going on with, do you have a sponsor? The usual, well, that means no. And the sponsor's always Satan at this point. The sponsor got it all wrong. How many guys are you sponsoring? Six. So let me get this straight. You don't have a sponsor, but you're sponsoring six guys. We have a serious problem. When did you become Moses? Tell me about step 11. What do you mean? What do you mean what I mean? Tell me about meditation. Well, I really, that means you don't. How about pray? I pray in the morning. Okay, but there's a thing that says when we retire. And I, well, I kind of fell off of that. So you don't have anything with 11. How's 10 look? Nothing going on with 10. Then we get to the million-dollar question. How many outstanding amends do you have that you're consciously aware of that you could be making and you haven't? And it's usually like a bunch, a whole bunch. Come out of the gate like gangbusters and then tail off. And I tell them, do you see why you're in the pit you're in? You became God and you're not alcoholic anymore based on your behavior. Hey, if you want to know my belief systems, I'll take a look at my actions. And I tell them, based on your behavior, you're not alcoholic anymore. You don't need to do this. You're God. I have no sponsor, not doing the steps. I have outstanding amends that I'm not making. You're God. You're in control of the next drink. That's how slippery this thing is. I don't want to do that walk. Thank God I haven't tested it. And somewhere, as we start to complete amends, and I'm running out of time already, but as we start to complete this amends, it says we've entered the world of the Spirit in step 10. So I can still be seeking out people, still making amends, but it's this shift where we enter the world of the Spirit, where everything has changed. Everything begins to change. We begin to see clearer and report things as they are. Part of being enlightened is reporting things as they are. Not always, but usually. Seeing beyond what the eye see, if you will. When I first got sober, I got a sponsor because I didn't want to do this alone, and I was told get a sponsor, so I got a sponsor. 31 years later, I need a sponsor. I can't even fathom doing this without a sponsor. My sponsor is one of my heroes, an idol to me. Sometimes, you know, Monday at 7 o'clock, I don't want to share this inventory, but I'm glad when I call, he's going to say, you know, AA police. You know, when he picks up, hello, Peter. And off we go. So it's a bunch of years later, and I need that guy, that coach, that manager, that sponsor. Because as clear as God has allowed me to see, and as good as God has allowed me to hear, that I'm still deaf and blind in some places. There's something called the shadow side of our soul, yeah? Shadow side of a soul is a part of me, and I have it. I haven't been lifted past it yet, gotten a lot better. Shadow side of my soul is a part of me that does not know God. And that's where all the stuff is, all the manifestations of self, all the greed, all the anger, all the fear, all the stuff. All generated by fear because God is not going to work here. I know it. The shadow side of our soul. And it follows me around like a shadow. And that's my moments of doubt and skepticism. How am I going to go make this approach? How am I going to make this? It's impossible. Why am I making this amends? It's been 40 years. That's the shadow side of my soul. And I make the amends and the shadow gets smaller. Will it be gone? I don't know. That's God's job. But a lot of chopping wood and carrying water, and little by slow we start to get freer. And what I've learned is this, in Alcoholics Anonymous, that God carries his water in broken pots. That's us. That makes no sense to a civilian. Why would God put fresh water in a broken pot? Because that's what God does. Lord knows we need them more than anyone. I'm so broken and thirsty for him. God carries his water in broken pots. I think if God was a human power, he gave up on me, you know, a long time ago. Thank God for God. And what has happened out of these amends is, you know, I complete the amends, now I have to live this way of life. And sometimes before I make the amends, I had to be living that way of life, so the words are more convincing than just some words to get myself off the hook. But little by slowly over the years, because God has allowed me to walk this walk, not perfect, but walk this walk, that my family, you know, my brothers and I and my dad and I, the relationships were at best splintered, putting it conservatively, are not anymore. We're closer than close can get with all our stuff. But it's different. There's no wedge between us. Everything's been put on the table. And this last thing, it allowed me, when I was young, I would never tell my dad I didn't do something. I'd lie and say I did it. I wouldn't say I forgot to do something. I would lie and say I did it. Because I fear what he might think. In AA, I forgot to do it, Dad. I'm afraid to do that. I don't know how to do that. How did you do it? Same with my brothers. That's transparency, and that builds trust. And that's what this has done for me, to walk a lot lighter. The carpenter said, wear the world like a loose garment. Until I start wearing the world like a loose garment, I don't even know what that's like. Once I start wearing like a loose garment, how could I go back and be in bondage of self again? It's way too painful. Get a double and pour it now. Once I taste the honey, I want more. That's called Alcoholics Anonymous. And for this, I am so grateful. That's all I got. Peace.
Thank you. All right.
Can we give one more round of applause for Peter? All right, and now we will have our secretary's report by our friend Josiah.
Hi, my name is Josiah. I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. And I have asked Johnny to read the recovered statement.
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm an alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
Thank you, Johnny. 1940 style big book sponsorship. From the forward to the second edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, and come to believe and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Could I get a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anybody in the room tonight that requires a sponsor? Nobody? Excellent. One right here. Do you mind standing up? It's not to embarrass you. No? All right. That's fine. I get it. Come on. There we go. So if you raise your hand, let's get this lady back to God. And anyone that didn't feel comfortable standing up, please get with someone that raised their hand, and we'll try and get you back to God. Please join us Monday nights, where our big book study meeting makes the book come alive. Fellowship starts at 6:30, and the big book study starts at 7:15. It's going to be on the third floor of this building. It's going to be to the right or the left when you walk in the entrance. We have CDs, mugs, large print big books, the Little Red Book and Big Book dictionaries for sale in the back next to the Four Absolute sign. And now for the slides. These are some volunteer opportunities. We have a lovely flyer for in the back next to the things that are for sale. Broward County Institutions Committee, did they have, it's right around the corner. September 14th is the next meeting. The address and time is listed. It's at 10 a.m. at the 12-step house. Gratitude Dinner Planning Meeting, Sunday, September 29th at 1 p.m., and that's going to be at the Pompano Beach Group off of McNabb Road. General Service District 9, the quarterly Area Assembly Host Committee is going to be October 4th through the 6th, 2019, and that's going to be at the Marriott at the Boca Center. So, not too far of a drive. Early Timers Meeting, presented by the District 9 Archives. There will be three speakers with 25 or more years of recovery, and that's going to be Saturday, October 12th, 5:30, coffee and dessert. It's very important, and 7:30 is the speaker meeting. Alcoholics and God, that's tonight. We hold it every Thursday. Please come next week and hear Peter. I think that'll be his ninth session. Again, fellowship starts at 6:30. We love having you guys come early and talking to us. And then obviously, please be ready to begin at 7:15 at the sound of the bells. One more thing, let's respect the property, respect the church, and be 75 feet away from the doors before smoking or vaping. But thank you guys for coming out. We'll see you next week.
Okay. So we have tonight's session and all other sessions online at alcoholicsandgod.org. Please feel free to listen. And then everyone, I would like to invite you to our Monday night meeting. As Josiah told us earlier, it's on the third floor. 7:15, just like this meeting. And for anyone who would like to thank the speaker afterwards, please line up in the center, and let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread.
doodles and zans, and oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you, baby, baby. Yes, when you're laughing, when you're laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, you bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope thank you.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. Out in the dark,
Michael Chase, here's that song you've been asking me for a million years. I finally pulled it out the corners of my mind, and here you go. Fog is lifted, see the light, count my blessings when I go to sleep at night, and I dream now. Fear has left me and I'm standing tall. A pile of bricks now lies where once there stood a wall that I hid behind. For all this time, sometimes it takes a burning bush or a great white light to set you right. Well, my eyes don't cry now, I'm about to die. Pity party's over, the guest of honor has arrived, and he's on my side. For the first time in my life, are green now, growing vines. They twist and turn each way, flowers blooming all the time outside my door. But never before I had to change everything to realize that today is the best day of my life. Broken man, I traveled far and wide, drew the great divide through his own heart, yeah. Well, I have a life today when it's given away, and it's just about to start. Show up and plug in my guitar, and I play my songs, and people sing along, and stomp their feet and raise their arms. And here in this moment that we share, nothing could come in. Lessons when I go to sleep at night, and I dream now. Yeah, I dream now, and everything's all right. Oh, man. Going on 10 years old, that song is. God bless. I love you, Mike Chase. Bye.
Take that one man that just won't say.